I was very curious as to how I ended up being in part of the 2% margin of error. So I was a graduate student at UCLA at the time. I went to the research library and read everything I could find about polygraphs. And well, what I discovered really shocked me. And the key resource that I would recommend to any listeners to check out if they want to know more about lie detectors is the late David T. Licken's book, A Tremor in the Blood, Uses and Abuses of the Lie Detector. Professor Licken was a professor of psychology at the University of Minnesota, and he did a great deal of research, had a considerable interest in polygraphs, and he wrote the seminal work on that, which is A Tremor in the Blood, first published in 1981. And it turns out that the polygraph is basically junk science. It purports to detect deception, but it really doesn't. You think about it, the claim that someone can tell whether or not another person is lying, it's really a test in mind reading. And so that's a science, mind reading, that has yet to be developed. No one can do it. And it certainly can't be done with a polygraph. In fact, the polygraph test actually depends on the polygraph operator lying to and otherwise deceiving the person who's being tested.
Now, why is that true?
And well, the first lie is that this device even works for detecting deception at all. It's important that the person who's being tested believe that the device can tell whether they're lying or not. It's part of an interrogation ploy. And the second thing is that the very procedure, and let me explain how they make a decision whether you're lying or not. Let's suppose the question was whether you robbed the bank. And so anyone who's brought in by the police and strapped to a polygraph might react strongly when asked if they robbed the bank, even if they didn't, just because you're in that situation, you're a suspect.
It's a provocative, scary question.
Right, an accusatory one. So polygraph operators understand this. So they've devised what they think is a way of determining whether of compensating for that. But it depends on secrecy and deception of the person who's being tested. So what they'll ask is a series of questions that they'll compare to the ones about the bank robbery. They will say, that the sort of person who would lie to get out of trouble is the same sort of person who would rob a bank and then lie about it. And people who have a history of lying tend to go on to commit crimes like bank robbery. So if I were to ask you, Whitley, did you ever lie to get out of trouble, you could say no, couldn't you?
I could not say no.
So they get you to answer no.
I've been married for 42 years. Of course I've lied to try to get out of trouble.
Sure. Well, they expect that everyone will lie to that question, okay, and answer it no, and but they'll have doubts about it. So they want to get to, in a sense, trick you into lying to these control questions, as they're called, control or comparison questions.
Right.
And then they'll compare your reaction to that question to the one about robbing the bank. So if you appear to be more nervous, if you sweat more, if your heart beats faster, if your breathing is a little more erratic, when you say no, that you've never told a lie to get out of trouble, then when you say no, I did not rob the bank, then they'll assume that you didn't rob the bank because the question about lying to get out of trouble seems to bother you more.
Now that seems very logical to me. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it is that it's extremely simplistic. You might still be more nervous about the bank robbery and whether you're facing, if you're in police custody being questioned about the bank robbery, you face serious jail time if you're not believed and if you're convicted. So many people will still react more strongly to the question about the more serious matter, like robbing the bank, than to the question about having lied to get out of trouble. And here's another problem with the methodology, and that is that the more honest you are, the more likely you actually are to fail the test.
Why is that?
You know, in your years as a parent, you've lied to get out of trouble. So say you make that admission. What's the polygraph examiner going to do? He's not going to just rule out that question and move on to something else. He's going to ask you about instances where you've lied to get out of trouble. He'll ask you very sternly, what lies have you told? And so you unburden yourself and talk about what lies you've told. Then what he's going to do is to rephrase the question and try to cut off further admission. So he'll say, I'm glad you told me this, but I hope that you're not the kind of person who routinely lies. Other than what you told me, did you ever lie to get out of trouble? Or you might rephrase it, did you ever lie to get out of serious trouble? He'll eventually get you to answer that question no, but he still expects that your answer is going to be a probable lie. So here's the problem. The more that you've unburdened yourself, the more that you've told the truth, tried to answer that question truthfully, and the more you feel at ease and relaxed when you answer it because you've told the truth, the more likely you are to fail, because it makes the basis of comparison to the relevant question, the one about robbing the bank, appear stronger by comparison.
Now, I was given, in my lifetime, three polygraph tests, all of which had to do with a book I wrote called Communion, and which had, I'm sure you know of the book, and it contains some rather extraordinary claims about Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which happened, as far as I was concerned, and I passed all three tests quite easily. But what you're telling me is I could just as easily have failed. Is that right? I mean, it just seems like a matter of chance.
Yes, it is indeed. Chance is a big element of it. Another big element is the polygraph examiner's expectations. There was a famous CBS 60 Minutes expose on the polygraph that aired back in 1986, in which they had a photography magazine, and they set up a scenario where they called three different polygraphers saying that a piece of camera equipment had gone missing, and they believed that one of several employees had stolen it. And in each case, they fingered a different employee as a likely suspect. And so each polygrapher came in and polygraphed several different employees. And in each case, the one that they found deceptive was the one that had been fingered as the likely suspect beforehand. So that sort of bias, the expectation that the person is probably guilty, can certainly influence outcomes, as can the expectation that a person is truthful.
Yeah, well, in my case, they thought I was guilty. They were certain I was lying in all three of them.
That happens, then you are indeed lucky to pass.
Right. I think I was lucky to pass because now looking back on it, I can see where, who knows what the outcome might have been. So in this case, in the 60 Minutes case, the truth was that no one had actually been deceptive because the whole thing was a setup. Is that correct?
That's correct. Nothing had been stolen. So if the polygraph really worked, everyone should have been found truthful.